Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, first hour flew by. In L.A., it's hour two. Live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Not going to lie, my hair is a bit of a tire fire this morning, but I'm okay with it. Living in a hotel for the next 3 weeks. And, by the way, I called the hotel staff this morning when I got up. I said, can you guys make me a coffee? I'm paying a lot for this room. How about you make me a coffee? And you can tell when you wake up Monday morning at a hotel, nobody's there because everybody checks out on Sunday.
Right.
I had like 7 people making a coffee for me. I like being pampered like that. It's the way my life should be. I just push a button and 7 people bring me coffee. That's the new reality for me.
Well, you live there now.
I kind of do. They had weddings all weekend. I was like, yeah, I just sat looking at the weddings and looking at the people all drinking and mimosas at 8 in the morning.
It's like you're like a writer. You should write something.
Yeah, like Hemingway, except no talent. Yeah, exactly.
Hemingway by the sea, you know?
That's Joy Taylor. It's great to have you in. Where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong, brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Tired of cooking at home? Change it up without getting up. Jersey Mike, go to their app. No contact delivery, no contact at the door. Pick up Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. And here we go. Colin right, Colin wrong on a Monday.
Where Colin was right.
Carson Wentz is out of Philadelphia and now an Indianapolis Colt. The day before, I did a segment that was borderline tampering, trying to get him to Indianapolis. I think this is the best fit. Carson Wentz tends to move a little too much for my taste, but with the Colts, he or Sam Darnold work because they wouldn't have to be as reckless, because they wouldn't have to leave the pocket as much. I think the Colts now are probably just one more wide receiver or tight end target for being a team that can win a Super Bowl, but Carson Wentz to Indy is what I was hoping for and what I got.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Brooklyn Nets, well, what do you know? They've won 6 straight. They went 5-0 on their West Coast roadie. They're actually 12-2 against top teams. So this isn't one of those fake NBA winning streaks where you play the dregs of the league and go 8-0. They've played 14 top teams. They've won 12. And by the way, Kevin Durant's been nursing a hamstring, I think, and James Harden took over. So 1-6 straight, 5-0 on their road trip. There's a lot of ways it could go sideways, but as of now, I'm wrong. It's been great.
Where Colin was right.
Well, I've been saying this. I didn't buy Pittsburgh all year. I said Big Ben is old and high maintenance, and now Ike Taylor's calling him out. Now Kevin Colbert, the GM, gave him a lukewarm, supportive PR drop last week. And, you know, I think he was awful down the stretch. Last 5 games, he was 1-4. He had 8 picks. His lack of commitment has caught up to him. And this is kind of what I've thought Big Ben has been, a little coddled over the last several years, and it's catching up to him.
Where Colin was wrong.
You know, for years, I said Howie Roseman and the Eagles were well-run. They're not. Story out this morning, the Eagles got fleeced in the deal, and they know it. Listen, they're not drafting well. The last Pro Bowler they drafted was Carson Wentz. I think they butchered the Jalen Hurts-Carson Wentz relationship. I think the roster in spots is too old. I think there's way too much ego in the front office. Howie Roseman ran off Chip Kelly, who, by the way, I ran into this weekend on his bicycle. So Philadelphia, I thought they were just this great franchise, and right now they're a mess, and they got too much ego and chaos in the front office.
Where Colin was right.
The Denver Broncos reportedly are looking to replace Drew Locke, who to me is too casual, a little too concerned with being cool, throws too many 50-50 balls in the air, and I sold my Drew Locke stock mid-season. Now, I said before the year, I said there's something there, and I still think he's talented, and people have said, well, why are you moving off him? It's not complicated. I have more information, more games. I do believe you got to give a quarterback, even in this era, 15, 16, 20 games. But since he was drafted, he has the lowest completion percentage in the NFL. Again, I think he's got sort of a Jay Cutler thing where he's a little casual, a little bit of ego, not playing with enough urgency, and according to reports, John Elway would move off tomorrow.
Where Colin was wrong.
Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers are number one in the East. I always thought he was silly, a little flaky, super talented, but he's sort of what Giannis isn't, which is he's got some finesse. He's got a little mid-range jumper. He can shoot. He's got a little touch. His offensive game is layered. You stop him here, he can go there. Whereas with Giannis, I kind of feel like there's a ceiling and limitations. All his numbers are up this year. Doc Rivers certainly deserves credit, but I always thought he was talented. That's obvious. He's got a lot of Shaq where there are times you're like, he shouldn't be able to do what he's doing at 7-1, but he's really played well. And the chemistry with him and Ben Simmons is working, and I'm wrong.
Where Colin was right?
Oh. According to a very legitimate reporter, Barry Jackson, Miami Herald, the Dolphins are interested in trading for Deshaun Watson. First of all, Deshaun's talented. But this goes to the core of something I believe to be true. Tua's limited, and the Dolphins deep down will support him publicly, but they know he's limited. Listen, if you're trying to move off your quarterback 9 starts in, you're seeing stuff at practice you don't love. 3 different games last year, Tua had under 100 yards passing. He was benched twice for an old guy. And in the end, in a league where there's so much special, Tua looks pretty formulaic. There's a certain way he's got to play. Doesn't throw particularly well when he's rushed. And the Dolphins appear to know it.
Where Colin was wrong.
Joe Milton is the 6th scholarship quarterback to transfer at Michigan under Jim Harbaugh. He's had 4 starting quarterbacks transfer in 6 years. Listen, if you'd have asked me the one thing he would have gotten right at Michigan, I would have said he'll get the quarterback right. He just wears guys out. For the life of me, Andrew Luck appears to be the exception, not the rule. I still think Harbaugh's a good coach, but, you know, at some point, no Michigan quarterback has made it to a 4th season under Jim Harbaugh, and Jim Harbaugh's got to own it. He's wearing these young kids out, and he's got to figure out a way to either separate from the process, but Milton's another one. In, out, won't finish there.
Where Colin was right.
I've defended Derek Carr for years. I said he's a top 10-12 quarterback, and last week the story came out that the best young GM in the NFL, arguably Chris Ballard of the Colts, called the Raiders and wanted to make a deal for Derek Carr. And the Raiders smartly said, we're hanging up the phone. In the last 2 years, Derek Carr has 48 TDs, 17 picks, and 101 passer rating. That's in a new system. That's with a lot of young receivers, a new tight end, a lot of moving parts, and dealing with John Gruden's, volume. So Derek Carr is absolutely a top 12 quarterback in this league. I've said there's a lot of Tony Romo here. Good arm, not great, but he can move. There are certain throws he makes, some timing throws he makes. I think he makes them just about as well as anybody in the NFL. And finally the Raiders. To me, he's the life preserver in a million questions for the Las Vegas Raiders right now. He's the one thing, he and the tight end are the 2 things I really like.
Where Colin was right.
All you Zion doubters, do you realize in February, listen to this, Zion not only averaged 27 per game, he shot 66% from the floor. Nobody in a month has duplicated that since Charles Barkley in 1983. Yesterday, he took over the game, had 24 in the second half against the Celtics. It is amazing to me all the doubters with Zion. Folks, 66%. He is right now, indisputably, the most guaranteed basket. He's the best 2 in the league. Nope. Now, he's not going to get you 3s, but you can't tell me if you're shooting 66% on 2s, he's the best 2 in the league. And how many games has he played? I don't even know, 50? This kid is, and if you watch that game yesterday, he was bringing the ball down the floor. He is such a unique body type. And the other thing, his ability to jump quickly, like he is just boom up. He gets 40 inches off the floor. For a guy that weighs 285, his explosiveness is sick. There's just nobody else in the league like him. So I can sit here and just watch his highlights all day. I love watching him play. All right, good stuff. I got Rick Bucher next. We got Justin Turner of the Dodgers. Best roster in a decade in Major League Baseball. Dodgers are, they added Trevor Bauer. That's the last time you and I was it one of the last times we worked together? Justin Turner for the Dodgers showing up today. Rick Bucher is coming up next. And some more thoughts on Deshaun Watson. Peter King's got some new stuff coming out today.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Black Rifle Coffee. Coffee company serving premium coffee to people who love America. www.blackriflecoffee.com/herd. 20% off your first coffee club order. NBA now gets interesting. We are getting to the All-Star break. That's the game apparently nobody actually wants to play, but they're going to. They've named starters and reserves, and Rick Bucher's been covering the NBA for a long, long time, and he now joins me live. All right, so I watched the Celtics melt away a lead yesterday, and I sit there and I think to myself, I've been watching the Packers for years. They're patient. They develop players. They're frugal. They're smart. And they never have enough stars. And I watch the Celtics, and everybody loves Danny Ainge. And I watch him yesterday, and I'm like, they need more good players. And in the end, has this grand, patient experiment failed this morning?
It has. Now, I do have to throw a certain asterisk on it because it's an incomplete picture right now. They are missing both Kemba Walker, the real Kemba Walker, and Marcus Smart. So they're playing without a true playmaker on the floor. And my concern about them coming into the season was that they were not going to have enough size, that Daniel Theis and Tristan Thompson were simply not going to be enough to get it done. But I think this is a clash of what our expectations are, that the Boston Celtics are supposed to be turning the corner and now be a title contender right there with the Bucks and the Heat and the Brooklyn Nets. And the fact of the matter is, Danny Ainge is right. When he said his roster, put it on him. His roster is not good enough. He's 100% correct. Their roster, they are a 500 team, and by and large, they have 500 talent.
Yeah. So are you surprised that Miami has not necessarily unraveled? They've just regressed to the mean a little bit. Are you surprised by it?
I actually am surprised because I just thought that their attention to detail during the regular season, they're a little bit like the San Antonio Spurs East. I didn't know that they would be as good as they were in the bubble, but I didn't expect them to fall this far. But what we're seeing is, one, the absence of Jay Crowder. Never realized how valuable he was as a defensive piece. Jimmy Butler has missed time, has been in and out of the lineup. And two young guys who were on fire in the bubble, Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson, have been exposed to a certain extent. Teams are exploiting them at the defensive end, and they're not knocking shots down as consistently as they did in the bubble. It took me back, Colin, to remembering that when we were getting ready to go into the bubble, I got this sense that there was a lot of teams that were looking at it with uncertainty. And the Miami Heat approached it with as opportunity. Like, they got together, they're in Florida. They saw it as, hey, this is a short run. And if we just attention to detail and we do the right things, we could make something out of this. And indeed they did. But what we are seeing is that was a reflection of them taking advantage of the bubble circumstances and not necessarily who they really are.
They may be a tinderbox emotionally, but are you surprised how quickly Brooklyn's become good?
Not really, because I thought that they were going to be the best offense in the league when Harden first joined them. And I thought that was going to be tough to compete against on a night-in, night-out basis. I don't look at them, because of their recent swing, as being as good as everybody suggests that they are. Yes, they beat the Lakers, but they beat the Lakers without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. Yes, they beat the Clippers, but they beat them based on what is wrong with the NBA right now, which is that flopping is a winning strategy. James Harden, without question, flopped on the last play and was rewarded for it. And the load management approach to the game has just completely gotten out of hand, where you're trying to win a game and you decide, well, sorry, Paul, you've hitched your Paul George, you've hit your limits, your minute restriction.
Right.
We're going to have to sit you for the final 3 minutes. If neither of those things happen, if you don't reward the ridiculous flop and you don't sit Paul George, the Clippers win this game because the Nets, for as dynamic as they are offensively, could not slow them down. Their defense could not come through in the final minutes. And that is my great issue with them. As dynamic as they are offensively, defensively, they're still susceptible.
You and I talked about this in the podcast last night about Anthony Davis, that there's very few what I would call really ones in the NBA. I think Dame Lillard is, LeBron is, Chris Paul is, Steph Curry is, where emotionally and physically, every night, same guy. Yep. Giannis is a little bit of a liability late. Kawhi's nonverbal. Kyrie's a little flaky. Kevin Durant, you're never quite sure where he is. And then there's Dame and Steph and Chris Paul and LeBron. You get the same dude every night.
Yeah.
And I watch Anthony Davis. And if you ask Lakers brass privately, are you a little disappointed with what you were getting this year? This was going to be the year of the subtle baton pass. Yeah. And he didn't show up. He didn't play very well. He's hurt again. You think privately they'd admit, even with a title, they're disappointed?
Yeah, look, I feel as if under the circumstances, having won a title, having a short offseason, having no training camp, and I can't help but feel that the Lakers know who Anthony Davis is. And this is why, in spite of all his amazing talent, the Pelicans barely got to the playoffs, would scratch their way in. And if you are a top five player, as many people rate him, I don't care who you have around him, you should at least be making the playoffs. Kevin Garnett, year after year, couldn't go very far, but he damn sure made sure the Minnesota Timberwolves were at least a playoff team.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony Davis was not capable of that in New Orleans. So simply because he came to the Lakers, and I guess I thought that winning a championship might give him a little more of that resolve.
Yeah.
Might give him a little more belief and determination in his own abilities. And while I was never convinced that the torch would be passed and he would become everything that LeBron is as far as making other guys better, I did expect that he was going to come out with something additional to prove. But the Lakers collectively have not really approached it that way. You know, they coast for 3.5 quarters and they measure teams and they go, you know what, if we play hard for 6 minutes, we can still put these teams away. And for the most part, that's what they've done. So I don't know that we've seen the real AD. And we certainly haven't seen the real Lakers, and yet they were still, are still, 22-9. So I'm going to reserve judgment on all of that. But to me, the big picture is AD is all that he's always been, and the championship does not appear to have made a significant change in that.
Finally, Zion is putting up historic numbers, and let's take out yesterday, it's not translated to wins. Why?
Two reasons. One, because of the way the game's being played right now. It is an offensive-oriented game. Nobody's playing great defense. And so Zion is putting up these tremendous numbers. And I love watching him play. It's just entertaining to watch a body like that move like that and finish around the rim like that. But that said, and you and I talked about this, there are stars and there are superstars. Stars get their numbers, sometimes extraordinary numbers. Superstars get their numbers and they get other people numbers. And Zion's game doesn't really equate to creating easy opportunities for other people. You look at his assist totals, and then you go to the defensive end, and he's really not a factor there. I mean, for a guy who can move the way he can and has the leaping ability, you would think that he would be averaging more than, well, less than a block shot a game. I think it's also the composition of the Pelicans in that you have a defensive-oriented coach, and where is the real leadership with this team? Again, kind of like the Celtics, they're a really good team and they have a dynamic player like Zion, but he's a two-point scorer in what is now a three-point league, and he is not a factor in that aspect of the game whatsoever. And when you have both Zion and Steven Adams on the floor, you have two guys who are not three-point threats whatsoever.
Yeah.
In a league that values the three-point shot more than anything else.
Love watching the video, though. Brick Bucher, Fox Sports. Great talking to you, buddy. Thanks.
You got it, Colin.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. You know, and I'm not one of these good old days, you know, guys. Like, I watch the NBA. But he is really old school. It's very Barkley. It's very Karl Malone where, you know, I mean, Charles could shoot threes, but Charles finished at the rim a lot, and he created conflict. He would attack. D. Wade's game was largely, D. Wade's probably played bigger than anybody in the history of the league at 6'4.5". What made D. Wade's game so fun, it was so much about contact. He was like a football player playing in the NBA. Now, he hit the deck a lot because of it, probably shortened his career, but I miss guys that go right at the rim. Barkley did, Malone did, D. Wade did. It's a very old school style of play. But I do think the league now is so much about the jumper. I think sports is better when it's layered. I like running games in football. I do. I like base runners in baseball. Like I like the layers to basketball. And I think I would love to see another four or five guys that attack the rim, don't shoot threes. And I think for 280 pounds, I've never seen a player get 40 inches off the floor faster. Not Barkley, not Malone. The ability to get up fast. And by the way, nobody's taking a charge from him. None of these skinny jeans guys want any. He's going to get more. He's shooting 66%.
Would you want to do that?
Oh, God, no. God, no. He and Jokic in Denver. I mean, who's taking a charge? He's like a refrigerator.
Yeah, no,
nobody's going to get run over on Tuesday night in the NBA with that. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, the Eagles got a third-round pick and a conditional second-round pick from the Colts for Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
But the team is reportedly not thrilled by the deal. They realized they were selling at a low point after Wentz's poor performance last season. And while they recognize they got fair market value for him, the organization is reportedly disappointed they didn't get in return what they had invested in him.
Yeah, well, maybe don't blow up the locker room.
You know how I feel about draft picks. So, you know, I think you got what you needed out of him. Look, he had a MVP level season, which very much contributed to that Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
You got a Super Bowl while he was there, and he contributed to it. You've been relevant from the moment that you've taken him. And while, yes, he struggled, and there's a lot I don't like about how things ended there, I don't like the dysfunction overall in the organization. I don't know that that's all Carson Wentz's fault. But you definitely got value out of him. I think organizations get a little wild with what they should be getting back in trades. If you wanted to get the full value out of Carson Wentz, then you shouldn't have let everything internally combust the way that it did, and you had to trade him.
Well, it's probably like when you get a Mahomes or a Justin Herbert or a Josh Allen, and they're really just different. They just look different. They play different. They're stronger. You should worry a little less about winning trades and more about making sure you get them help. Like, I'll overpay for a guard. Because if my quarterback, Josh Allen or Herbert or Mahomes, gets hurt, what's the price on that? Like, I understand when you're bad at quarterback and you're just trying to be, you know, you're in this race to not be pathetic. But once you get kind of a star quarterback in this league, my job, I think I have a greater responsibility to elevate or protect my star quarterback than I do to win a trade. That's kind of, you know, like once you get LeBron in your organization, don't worry about winning trades. Get him Anthony Davis. Give the Pelicans whatever they want. Get Anthony Davis and everything else will work itself out.
And I mean, if you're going to be aggressive, then don't sit around, you know, talking about your regrets. Like you went all in to get Carson Wentz. I think you got the value out of Carson Wentz. Also, there weren't a lot of buyers for Carson Wentz.
No.
So this is the market was dictated what you got for him.
Well, it looks like, what did they get again? They got a third.
They got a third round pick and a conditional second round pick, depending on, I don't have the numbers in front
of me. Carson plays a lot.
If he plays well, I think like 75%.
You'll get a first round pick.
You'll get a first round pick. So you got a first and a third, essentially, for Carson Wentz.
And you got the salary off the books.
Exactly.
Right.
So the Texans have not made Deshaun Watson available for a trade, but that's not stopping teams from showing interest. The Dolphins have been named as a potential destination since rumors of Watson's unhappiness in Houston began, and Miami is reportedly expected to be in the mix to acquire him if he becomes available. Foxbet has the odds for Deshaun's week one team. The Texans are still favored. Then the Panthers are the second best odds at +225. The Broncos are the third best odds now. Jets, 49ers, and then the Dolphins have the sixth best odds at +850. List of potential places, to me, the 49ers and the Dolphins are the only places I would want to go if I'm Deshaun Watson. Every other team on this list had a losing record last season. The Broncos aren't completely resetting, but, you know, we don't know what the Panthers are going to be yet with Matt Rhule. I think we both like Matt Rhule and what he's done there, but they're still an unknown. The Jets obviously have a new coach. The Texans have a new coach and are a disaster situation you're already in. 49ers and the Dolphins have the most upside if he wants to go somewhere that's a contender. I don't know that the 49ers are able to move enough things around or make enough trades to make it happen, make a significant offer.
Peter King has a story today, and Schrager told us the same thing an hour ago, that Deshaun Watson is not going to be traded. So what's interesting is Matt Stafford's off the market, Carson Wentz is off the market. According to Peter King and Schrager, Deshaun's off the market. The winner is Sam Darnold. I mean, because I don't think the Niners are going to move him. Sam Darnold's sitting there. The Bears don't have a quarterback, but they're a playoff team. Washington doesn't have a quarterback, but they're a playoff team. Marcus Mariota has been too injured. I don't think he's a dynamic thrower. When I look at this Deshaun thing, I think, you know, Sam Darnold's a real winner here because what's on the market? Stafford's off it. Wentz is off it. According to these stories, Derek Carr's also off it because we have a story now the Colts wanted him. Who's on the market?
Who is actually on the market is, well,
Sam Darnold.
Schrager also said that the Jets haven't made any decisions on Sam Darnold yet, but if someone came to the Jets with a significant offer, you imagine that they wouldn't be as attached to Sam Darnold as the Texans are to Deshaun Watson.
Darnold may
not be as dramatic because we saw what Carson Wentz got traded for. And I think we all think at this point Carson Wentz is better than Sam Darnold. At least we've seen more from Carson
Higher
Wentz.
Ceiling.
Right. So someone would have to really make an aggressive offer, I think. And so to your point, he's the only one that's actually available.
Well, I mean, I talked to somebody Saturday, and I asked about this. I asked somebody who I trust, a very good source. I said, why isn't Chicago and Washington making a run on Darnold? He said, listen, Darnold is thought of very highly by the best GMs in this league. It's not that people aren't making calls. It may be the Jets haven't made a decision.
Right.
So Darnold's coachable, dynamic, inconsistent, no question, but he's a kid.
And he had Adam Gase. So we all have to put everything in perspective because we've seen what happens when people leave Adam Gase. So the Nets wrapped up a five-game road trip with a 112-108 win over the Clippers last night. They went undefeated during their West Coast trip, even with Durant missing time due to a hamstring issue. They will return home on a six-game win streak, which is their longest of the season, and they are only a half game out of first in the East. I thought this was a very, very significant trip for them. They are 12-4 against teams that are .500 or better this season. They have six players shooting over 40% from three.
Do they really?
Kyrie, Harden, Durant, Jeff Green, Joe Harris, and Tyler Johnson are all shooting over 40% from three. And they're second in the league in three-point field percentage, 40.5. The Clippers are the first at 42%. But we knew that they were going to be able to put up points. Were they going to be able to play any kind of defense? They're pretty much middle of the league in defense, and that's really all they really need to be because they're going to score every time they come down the court.
Well, and also, let's start looking at the East. So Milwaukee's not a good late-game team.
Right.
They're just not because their best player is a liability. Philadelphia does not have enough shooting. Simmons doesn't. I mean, they really don't. Their two best players are not three-point specialists. Boston has limitations. They have to play a certain way. And Miami's missing another we always judge on championships. If Brooklyn gets to the finals in its first year, you would have to organizationally feel like that's a huge win.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what teams with three superstars should do. Now, it's not that easy to win a championship. So right. I don't think that the expectations of winning a championship in your first year together are really actually that realistic.
They're not.
To make it to the finals, yeah, that's really what they should do. I thought the Nets were going to come out of the East before Harden was there. Now, obviously, we had a lot of questions about how all of this was going to work, but it's looking like it's working, and they're doing this without Durant. Obviously, these are big personalities. Harden and Durant have played together before. Kyrie and Harden haven't, but it seems like they're all playing their roles to the highest of their ability, and that's what they need to do in order to win a championship.
And they're doing what the Lakers aren't. They're shooting threes well. Lakers are really the Lakers played the Nets recently, and the Nets got red hot from the outside, and the Lakers couldn't hit shots.
I'm concerned about the Lakers, and you know, I love what Philadelphia is doing this year. It looks like it's all coming together, but to me, those two teams need to be healthy going into the playoffs.
Yeah. Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Boy,
news.
Mock drafts are flying off the internet. Bucky Brooks, former NFL player and scout, joins us.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
What's the difference between an AMG skeptic and an AMG believer? The time it takes you to fire up the engine and hear it roar, go to mbusa.com/AMG, Mercedes AMG Driving Performance. Bucky Brooks, player, scout, now an analyst, NFL Network and Fox Sports, joins us. I got questions for Bucky. So you tell me, if you ran the Jets today, because here's my theory on Zach Wilson. So I have to consider my surroundings. I got Belichick's the best defensive coach ever. Sean McDermott appears to be great. Brian Flores is a star defensive coach in the making. And I'm going to go with a Mountain West quarterback for the next 2 years. And I don't know if Robert Saleh can coach Bucky. I have no idea. I can make every argument. I'm just going to go with Darnold, a kid that's been in this league and knows the division. Isn't there a risk moving off Sam?
You can't make that argument, Colin. I think the one thing about Sam Darnold, though, is you don't get the benefit of the clock and the rookie deal. Because Sam Darnold has to get that fifth-year option, the money kicks up into the $20 million range. So that prevents you from benefiting from what you would get on the rookie contract. So you can bring Zach Wilson in. You can keep Sam Darnold. And if Sam Darnold plays at a level where you deem him to be a franchise quarterback, you can do it. But from a monetary standpoint, it just makes sense to move on, get the young quarterback, and do a complete reset at this time.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck, Zach Wilson. That's a well-coached. I got a feeling in 3 years, if you move off Darnold, you're in last place because you're getting out coached every week. So with the Deshaun Watson deal, so there's a lot of stories out today. They're not going to move off him. Fine. But everything's negotiable. You're Houston. It's poisoning the locker room if he doesn't want to be there. You could get 8 picks. Is there ever a point when you'd be like, I don't want 8 picks because I can't guarantee they can play? Would you want to combine? What would you need a combination perfectly to replace Deshaun Watson?
You know, it would be hard for me to move off of Deshaun Watson for a few different reasons. One, I've drafted a guy who's played like a top 5 quarterback. Two, still for the next year and a half, I got him on terms that are very, very affordable in terms of building a team around him. And so the big money doesn't kick in for another year or two. So I really don't want to move off of that. And Colin, when you go back and you do the research, because this was floating on Twitter, the starting quarterbacks drafted in the first round from 2009 to 2016, 0 of 22 are with their original teams. And so if you think about that and think about how hard it has been to identify a franchise quarterback and retain a franchise quarterback, I have one at 25. I am not trying to give that up. And so it may sound great to get a 3 number one picks and maybe a Christian McCaffrey or a star level player, but it's so hard to find a franchise quarterback that I am reluctant to move on from Deshaun Watson, no matter how big the ransom may be based on what people may offer me.
When stories leak, whether politically or in sports, there's a reason they leak. Somebody wants them out. We've had multiple leaks talking about the Niners wanting to move off Jimmy Garoppolo. If they really wanted to, why would they put it out there? It's almost as if they're looking for something. Is it more of a commitment from him? Like, read the tea leaves for me. Why is there so much smoke on Garoppolo? Generally, if a team wants to make a trade, they keep it quiet and make the trade.
Yeah, I think there are a few different things. I think people have been able to look at the numbers and say that this is the right year for the 49ers. If they want to move off, it wouldn't crush them from a dead cap standpoint. All the money has been paid out. Secondly, when you go all the way back and you look at even the way that Jimmy Garoppolo played in their Super Bowl season, you have to wonder why in the second half when they had an opportunity to put the game in his hands, why didn't they do it? And so I think there's a little bit of, man, he's good, but we feel like we can get more. And so we saw this play out down in L.A. with the Rams. The L.A. Rams were good. They got to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff, but Sean McVay felt like they could get better. They wanted something else. And obviously, when you look around that division and you're Kyle Shanahan and you're looking around and seeing how this quarterback carousel is playing out, I think teams are saying, I need to have a top five quarterback to be able to get this done. I want a top five quarterback. I don't want to settle. That's why I feel like you're getting some of this conversation about Jimmy Garoppolo and some of these other starters. Teams are not necessarily willing to settle when they feel like better may be out there for them.
So the Tampa Bay is going to have an interesting situation. They got five or six guys, and they're going to have to make decisions. There's no way I'd move off Shaq Barrett. There's so few great pass rushers. I like Chris Godwin, but O.J. Mayo's coming back. I got a bunch of dudes at wide receiver. I got to be honest. If I had to make a decision, I'd move off Chris Godwin. I really would. Would you?
Yeah, man, I think if you value this in terms of like the positional value, pass rusher always trump wide receiver and some of those other positions. So if I had to make a choice between Shaq Barrett and Chris Godwin, I absolutely would opt for Shaq Barrett because we see what the pass rush does. Like outside of quarterback, it is all about the pass rush in the National Football League. And I've heard you mention this before, man. I don't want to say wide receivers are like running backs, but they do come down a dime a dozen. You can find them in all areas of the draft. You can find them in second stages. You don't necessarily have to have a marquee wide receiver to build a Super Bowl champion. So if I'm building a team and I'm using it just from a philosophical standpoint, I am always going to lean towards the pass rusher over the pass catcher because the pass rusher impacts the game far more than the pass catcher does.
I can't get enough of watching that Tom Brady Super Bowl video. It just warms my heart every time I watch it. All right, Bucky Brooks, Fox Sports, NFL analyst, good seeing you.
Hey, thanks for having me, Colin.
Yeah, you also, you do have to look. College football now furnishes the NFL with like 25 receivers a year. And I like Chris Godwin, but he was hurt a lot. Mike Evans is your number one. You get a tight end back. Leonard Fournette I'd move off of because of Ronald Jones. And again, backs. It's interesting. Momentum's a real thing. 1 year ago, before Brady went to Tampa, we all rolled our eyes at Tampa. It was just like, goofy. This is just good players, but goofy. Isn't it amazing how we view Tampa today? It's like, God, I'd love to play in Tampa. That's the power of Brady. I don't think Aaron Rodgers, you could move because of his personality, move him to Tampa, and everybody would want to play with Aaron. I don't think that's his personality. Maybe Mahomes has that. But there's a real power and momentum. Look at how we viewed a year ago Tampa. It's not like Jameis Winston didn't have talent. He threw for 5,000 yards.
Yeah, he also threw for the same amount of interceptions as he did Tony Downs.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jameis makes mistakes. But it wasn't that they lacked talent at quarterback. I look at Tampa today and I'm like, I could see all those guys saying, I'll take a pay cut. You would have never taken a pay cut. You used to go to Tampa to just make money. You regretted it, but you're like, well, it's a cheap place to live. Now, that's the power of LeBron. The power of LeBron. Yeah, I'll go to Cleveland. I'll win a title. I just look at Tampa differently today. 1 year ago, they were a circus. I remember the day we were on together. I'm like, Joy, I just got news. He's going to Tampa. And I was like, well, they've got weapons. but it's just today I think of them as an elite landing spot for anybody that wants to play. Cremo Barber Shave Cream gives you that close, comfortable shave. It fights beard itch. It's available at major retailers, Amazon.com and CremoCompany.com. I love their stuff, C-R-E-M-O, Cremo.